You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Buck, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. A beautiful October Thursday in Wisconsin. It's really nice.
It's crisp.
Yeah, it's crisp. And we have a very busy show for you. Jim Santel, host of Amicus, a law review, joining us after 9:30. Jim's show, by the way, Saturday mornings 9 to 11 across the network to talk all things legal. There are a lot of the things going on. There's lots of the legals. So we're to be talking about many of those issues with Jim Santel. Next hour, Hans Breitenmoser is going to be joining us. Really looking forward to this conversation.
He is a dairy farmer from Lincoln County. He's also a beef producer as well. And he's been on our show before. He's been on Pat's show. He's a regular on Pat's show. And when I wanted to reach out to someone about how the announcement of buying Argentinian beef would affect farmers, especially Wisconsin farmers, Darren Von Ruden, our friend, put us in line to Hans because he is also a beef producer.
Right. Of course, the president of the United States essentially saying that our beef producers don't understand.
Well, of course not.
They don't get it like he does.
No.
So we'll talk about that with Hans. In hour number two, we will lighten up for the last half an hour of the show. J.R. Radcliffe from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel will be here to talk all things sports. Really impressive showing last night from the Blue Jays.
Yeah, the Dodgers can be beat. Not by the Brewers, but they can be. That's the thing is, we beat the Dodgers so many times in the regular season.
Don't look back.
I can't help it. Yeah, so the Blue Jays, I'm rooting for the Blue Jays. I got friends who are Blue Jays fans, and so that was interesting to see. And there's one particular player we're going to talk to him about that you saw that's very
so
impressive.
Very, very impressive.
Is going to give a lot of dreams to men who will never play professional baseball.
Well, and I hope he can keep this going because you'd hate to see it be a one and done.
Well,
you know, there's going to be so much pressure on him now. Of course, it could all end. Right? Isn't the last game tonight?
Well, it could be the last game.
It could be the last game.
Yeah, they could force a game six and possibly a game seven. And I don't know if that guy will pitch again at that point because he
probably not tonight.
But yeah, no, not tonight. But it'll be interesting. We'll talk about that more. But I got a text message on my phone, Jane, from somebody. We're not going to disclose their identity.
Okay.
But apparently it's Calvin Butenhoff's birthday.
It's our resident young person's birthday?
Our old Gen Z, our elder Gen Z's birthday.
Our senior Gen Z.
Our seen Gen Z. Sweet Kelby, it's his birthday. Oh my gosh, happy birthday, Calvin.
Happy birthday, Calvin.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Big plans, big parties going to be happening in Eagle tonight. Going to rock Eagle.
You know it.
Not right.
No, it's going to be probably a normal night for me, but that's how I like it. So
nice and quiet.
Yes.
Nice and quiet. Well, happy birthday, Kelvin. 27.
Yeah.
27.
I mean,
keep it up, and eventually you're not going to be our resident young person anymore.
We're going to need a new young person.
We'll have to get a younger person.
It's like a millionaire who dates ladies. We have to get a younger version.
New model. No, we're delighted to have you here, Calvin. Important part of the show. So happy, happy birthday. Yeah. Wanted to start off with this. We're going to talk about the ending of the SNAP benefits, which is going to happen on Saturday in just a little bit. But this is from Laura Schulte from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel this morning. Lawmakers struggle with path to reopen to housing facilities for homeless veterans. In a hearing yesterday, both sides debated where the money should come from and if the state should hand over operations of the Veterans Housing and Recovery Program to different organizations. So the bill they're talking about that was authored by Republicans would allow Wisconsin to reimburse groups that offer services to unhoused veterans up to $25 per day per veteran. This money would come in the form of matching grants to funds supplied by the Fed. A second bill would allocate $1.9 million over the next 2 years to fund the matching grants. In case you have forgotten, and certainly there's so much to remember and so much news that comes out on a daily basis. Two of our three housing facilities for homeless veterans in Wisconsin closed.
Yes.
In September. Mm-hmm. And that forced the folks in these facilities to either move to a different one. One's in Chippewa Falls. Another one is in Green Bay. Others had to go out of state.
Mm-hmm. From what I understand, all who are in those places, all in those housing facilities had been placed in, like they're not back on the streets.
They didn't throw them back. Yeah. Which is great. But this doesn't, we still have this issue.
Yeah.
Also an important thing to remember, in his budget proposal earlier this year, Governor Evers asked for $1.9 million to keep the program running, but Republicans axed it from the budget.
Yeah. And now we're doing this.
We're back and talking about $1.9 million.
Well, also, it's a squabbling. Like, this is one where I'm going to say, I don't care who does it. Someone do something. This is $1.9 million. What are we doing right now?
We have $4 billion.
Why are we going back and forth in hearings? Why are we discussing? Just give them the money. Allow them to reopen. These are our vets. Case closed. Move on to something else. This is the third time we're talking about this. And I do not understand why this is still an issue, and I'm tired of, like, I know the Republicans axed it from the budget because they probably thought no one would notice until we're here now, and now they're trying to act magnanimous, and they're pointing fingers at Democrats, but Democrats are pointing fingers at Republicans. I don't care. I just want the money given, and let's not talk about anything else. Just give them the money, move on to something else.
Well, again, both sides love to talk about how much they love our veterans.
Absolutely.
And all the sacrifices that our veterans made on behalf of all of us.
Yeah.
And yet, when it comes to help them out, they love to talk about it. It's when it comes to funding it that they all disappear.
It's thoughts and prayers. It's what it is.
This goes back to John Stewart testifying in front of Congress, trying to get that fund for the first responders in New York about 9/11.
Yeah. Do your job.
And most of the chamber was empty of lawmakers.
Yeah.
They couldn't be bothered to show up for this, but they love our veterans.
They love our veterans. They love our farmers. They love our small business owners. They love our families.
Children.
But when it comes time when the rubber hits the road, they're not there. Or if anything, they're taking the cars away because they don't want us to have any access to benefits and or resources. And this is another thing where, you know, it should have been one Republican, one Democrat coming together saying, here's $1.9 million. Let's go have an early lunch. This should not be a hearing.
It shouldn't be this difficult.
Yeah.
The Department of Veterans Affairs expressed concerns about the new bills. The legislation will only supply matching grants to non-governmental organizations. And there are a limited number of how many of those groups will then qualify. That's according to the DVA Assistant Deputy Secretary Joey Hoey. Organizations will likely also struggle to find startup costs to find a new building or furnish a new building meant to house homeless veterans.
Or, Jane, or just an idea, or we give them the $1.9 million and they reopen the buildings that already exist and the people who have the jobs continue to work.
He does say that the Green Bay facility could be opened.
Yeah.
He said the one in Chippewa Falls is pretty much falling down.
Well,
and at some point is going to have to be raised.
Then,
which is going to require money.
Guess what then? Let's make it from $1.9 million to say $3 million to either renovate the building or find a new space. But again, this is not something that requires this kind of discussion. This should be just 5 sentences on a piece of paper, sign it, vote for it, give them the money. We have plenty of it in our coffers. The surplus could more than pay for it.
Absolutely.
But here we are squabbling over $1.9 million.
If you're just joining us on Matt and Air on Air, we're talking about an article in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about lawmakers struggling with a path to reopen two housing facilities for homeless veterans. This is in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. At issue is about $1.9 million. Congressman Derek Van Orden.
He was
in Wisconsin.
For why?
To testify at this hearing, asking lawmakers to set aside their differences to ensure that homeless veterans have access to their resources.
This man should be nowhere near that hearing. He should be nowhere near Madison. He shouldn't be anywhere. This is, that right there is infuriating, that he thinks his opinion should matter at all in this topic.
Well, and pointed out in this article, Derek Van Orden did not include funding measures for this in his proposed earmarks for 2026. Quote, Derek Van Orden didn't lift a finger to prevent a homeless veteran shelter in Chippewa Falls from closing down, according to the DCCC spokesperson. Van Orden owes Wisconsinites about why he failed to do everything in his power to bring federal money to keep it open and keep serving Wisconsin veterans.
This is just like the budget. He votes for the budget blueprint. He votes for the first version. He votes for the version that comes back from the Senate. Three times he votes for the budget, and in there cuts SNAP benefits, which he said wouldn't go down a nickel. And then he has the temerity to call the governor the next week to say, save our hospitals.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, by the way, now what Republicans, because they're having daily hearings,
yeah,
blaming Democrats for the shutdown. And that's one of their talking points now.
He does not belong in those hearings. His opinion is worthless on this. Shouldn't be there.
Van Orden says it's unnecessary to set aside earmarks in the federal budget for these veterans facilities because the money's already there. Veterans just need guidance on how to get it.
And he's what?
Quote, we have tens of thousands of dollars waiting for veterans to use. We just need to get the word out to our veterans, unquote.
He doesn't even know what he's talking about. He doesn't even know what he's testifying on. He is an embarrassment. He is as Tony says on the live stream, he is a fraud. He doesn't care about veterans. And by the way, if you don't know this, he is a vet. Thank you for your service. But he doesn't care about them. He uses his status for clout, and he uses it to get in people's face when they try to challenge his authority.
Yes.
He is embarrassing. He shouldn't have been in that room, and he's not even speaking on the topic.
Yeah. Well, he's going to have a challenger again in the next election.
I've heard of this person.
We'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
Gene from Eau Claire is on the line. Gene, good morning. Thanks for joining us. We don't have a lot of time. What did you want to say?
He's only there for the photo op. He does this all the time.
Yep.
He appears where there's a problem. He gets his picture taken, and he don't do a gal dang thing. So thank you for covering this. You're doing a great job. Goodbye.
Thanks, Gene.
I'm just going to say, to me, this is, Jane, I think you agree. It's $1.9 million. It's to help our homeless vets. I don't feel like this is...
When we're talking about $1.9 million, and then we talk about the fact that Kristi Noem is getting two new planes for $172 million each.
Yeah.
It does make you wonder where the priorities are.
I mean, when it comes to vets, it's obviously not the priority of Derek Van Orden, or he would have helped them in the first place.
When we return, we're going to talk about SNAP benefits hanging in the balance. They are set to expire on Saturday. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Box, Sweet Cal B on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine, where you can join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. After the 9:30 news, our friend and colleague, host of Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings, 9 to 11 across the network. Great show.
Oh, my goodness.
Jim Santel is going to be joining us, an acting attorney, a former U.S. attorney. He knows law.
He knows law.
He knows legal.
He and law are like best friends, Jane.
They talk frequently.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things to talk about, including a judge in Illinois who is not very happy with ICE and how ICE is treating people on the streets of Chicago in particular. So we're going to talk about that along with many, many other things.
Mm-hmm.
From what I saw on social media this morning, the United States blew another boat out of the water in the Mediterranean.
And they're just going to keep doing it because killing people stops drugs, I guess.
Apparently without knowing that what was on these boats. But anyway, Jim Santel is going to be joining us after the 9:30 news. Stay tuned for that. Wanted to start off with this. SNAP benefits are running out for almost 700,000 Wisconsinites on Saturday. Food Share is Wisconsin's version of SNAP, the program funded entirely by the federal government. Those will pause on November 1st. There are a number of food drives happening around Milwaukee County and probably in the community where you live as well.
We spoke to Emily Cephos yesterday, and she is running a food share in the Outagamie area that will be I'll tell you what, I will look after the show to see if there is a central place for all of that. I'll put that in the show notes. But if you need food, find it. If you can donate food, please do so.
Yep. And if you can donate money to food pantries, they're able to buy in bulk.
Yes.
So their dollars go a little bit farther if you're able to do that.
Yes, very, very good point. Because if the federal government isn't going to help us and Mary Felskowski says the state won't be helping us, it's up to us to help each other for the time being.
And I found this article in ProPublica this morning, which I think is also worth remembering. Back in spring, the Trump administration abruptly cut $500 million in deliveries from a program that sent American-produced meat, dairy, eggs, and produce to food banks and other groups around the country, about a quarter of the funding that it got the year before.
Yeah.
The items that were delivered through the Emergency Food Assistance Program were some of the healthiest stuff, again, fresh produce and things like that. The Trump administration canceled that.
Yeah, of course.
Over 4,000 deliveries between May and September across 50 states. And what happened to all that stuff that was supposed to be sent out to these food banks? It sat there and it rotted. This is from ProPublica. We'll include this in our show notes so you can take a look at it also.
I don't understand why, what that gained us. I'm at a loss for words when it comes to things like this, Jane. When we talk about these matters, it makes my brain short circuit.
It boggles the mind.
Because when you cancel programs, when you cancel funding or cancel programs that their jobs are to help people with food assistance or just living a little bit of a better life, what you're telling us is you don't care about these people.
This $500 million had already been allocated.
Yeah.
USDA did not respond to questions from ProPublica in a May letter responding to senators' concerns about this cut. USDA said it had made additional purchases through another program and that the emergency food program would continue to operate as originally intended by Congress. But again, they cut $500 million from that program that was already allocated and set to go out to food pantries, and then they just let it sit there and rot.
And my guess is that $500 million, half a billion dollars with a B, is probably going to go into the coffers that are going to be redistributed into the pockets of billionaires because of the big bill for billionaires. That's probably what's going to
happen. Well, that is their biggest concern,
yeah,
is making sure their donors are taken care of.
Yeah.
And when you hear Republicans talk about how this is all the Democrats' fault and they are the party of fiscal responsibility, this little tidbit also showed up this morning. This past Saturday, the director of the FBI, Kash Patel, apparently used his private jet, his government jet, to go see his girlfriend sing.
Can we just talk about the fact that Kash Patel has a girlfriend? I mean, seriously.
That's a whole nother.
It's a very weird thing that little troll of a human being gets to have girls like him. That's really weird to me. Very, very, very sweaty man.
Country singer Alexis Wilkins was singing as part of an event at Penn State. And on Saturday, apparently, the government jet took off from a Northern Virginia airport and landed at State College right near the campus.
Yeah, so that was our money.
But, yeah, that's our money.
That's our plane.
That's our money. They get to use it.
They get to have it.
They get to use it.
They get to keep it.
And work it to their advantages.
Absolutely.
But the rest of us, you know, Well, just 2 years of pain.
Jane, those billionaires are going to take that money from us, the taxpayers, mm-hmm. and they're going to reinvest it back into the country by way of paying for a ballroom where the East Wing used to be. So it's about investment, circular dollars. It's trickling down from them. Well, it's more like, you know how like there's a hard wind storm and like the rain goes vertical or goes horizontal? That's what it is. It's not like so much trickling down onto us. It's going horizontal onto other billionaires. So that's how the thing works.
That's
now.
That's how it's working.
That's how it works. It's horizontal, not vertical.
Again, check our show notes after the show is over. We will have links in there if you would like to look at some of these articles. And then we'll try and get some links in there as well if you would like to help and yes. donate to some local food pantries because that is going to be a need. We have news coming up next. When we come back, Jim Santel will be here from Amicus, a law review. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvinator on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, or what used to be Twitter. He joins us every Thursday at this time. Former U.S. attorney, acting attorney, Jim Santel, host of Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings across the network, 9 to 11. Listen to it. It's fabulous. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Jane, Greg, it's always a delight to be with you once again. And today, for those folks who are tuning in by StreamYard, you can actually see real law books behind me there. How exciting is that?
You rented them just for this. That's so nice.
I did. It's all a set. It's right. It's real, right. But I'm not real anyway, so not a great compromise.
No, he is an actual attorney who does legal things.
And he's real, too.
And he exists. We have a lot of things, very serious things to talk about this morning. And let's start with the situation in Chicago and ICE agents in Chicago and Bovino, the head of ICE, this ICE force in Chicago, is in a little trouble, it looks like. Or is that not the case?
No, I think he's in a lot of trouble. Anytime that a federal judge asks to see you every single evening to report on what you've done during the course of the day, you're probably in more than a little bit of trouble. And so that's what she has requested recently. The Seventh Circuit, the appeals court just above her, just yesterday said, well, that's a bit excessive, and said he doesn't have to show up for all of those. But she is plainly monitoring very, very closely what is going on. He is a U.S. Border Patrol commander. Again, you got it just right. His name is Gregory Bovino. And he is also this fellow who is seen on video hurling a canister of tear gas into a crowd. When you interview him, he plainly is not someone who's there committed to safety and security, but rather to, my words, not his, get people. And that is a commission, that's a mission, that's a goal, completely contrary to what we anticipate from anybody involving the administration of justice and certainly trying to keep peace on the streets of Chicago or anywhere. This is again, a reflection of the Trump administration directive to do whatever you want to do. And that's why this is so incredibly troubling.
Absolutely. And one of the instances, and again, this Bovino got in trouble before because he was directed not to be lobbing tear gas into residential areas. And then after she issued that order, he was caught on video doing exactly that. And at the same time, there were kids leaving their houses with their parents to go take part in a Halloween parade as he lobbed tear gas into the neighborhood. And another story that we mentioned briefly, at the same event, there is a running club in Chicago who posted this on social media. One of our athletes heading home from a team run yesterday, he turned onto his block. Border Patrol had it blocked off. Agents threatened to break his window if he didn't move his car before he could act. They pulled him out of the car, knelt on his back. Even though he never resisted, they broke 6 ribs and caused internal bleeding. Now, lest you think Border Patrol is coming back and saying, oh, that was a mistake. No, that's not what they're saying. Their Border Patrol came back and said, yep, we're doing our job. And if you're going to cause problems, then this is going to happen to you too.
It is, again, we are in absence for incredible adjectives here, right? Shocking, stunning, contrary to what we do in America. And here, not only should this be a source of outrage as to this particular young man, but know as well that there are remedies here. They're not criminal in nature, although they could be, depending upon if this fellow has indeed engaged in violations of the Constitution in doing this. It certainly appears. But there's also the notion of, again, a prosecution for arrest under circumstances where you're using excessive force. And people have, in fact, gotten monetary damages against law enforcement when they engage in this kind of conduct. There are remedies out there. And again, as I said, the local state's attorney there in Illinois should also be looking at whether or not this conduct is fundamentally criminal in nature. Only the DA, only the state's attorney can prosecute that. But all those things should be on the table, in addition to America, wherever you are, expressing absolute outrage, demanding that this not continue. Sarah Ellis, again, is the name of the judge who deserves our commendation and our support. She is the one who's right now trying to keep a hold on this, stunningly saying, can we please not use tear gas when children are trick-or-treating tomorrow? What a stunning, stunning indictment of America that a federal judge has to say, let's let the kids get some candy and enjoy the evening without being gassed on the streets of America. What is going on?
If you're just joining us right now on Matt and Aaron Air, you are talking to Jane and Greg. We are on the show right now, Matt and Aaron Air, and we are talking with Jim Santel, who is the host of Amicus, a law review, which is on 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. every Saturday. And if you miss an episode live, you can always go to civicmedia.us/shows, find Amicus, and you can download about 2 months worth of shows, if not more, honestly, because you're once a week. So there's a lot of access. It's a great, great program, and I highly recommend you check it out because it's like a little law class every single week for you. But Jim, earlier this week, I was talking about on the show with Jane that the way we're speaking about this country is how we used to speak about other countries, quote, yes, lesser countries, when it came to violence in the street as done by the federal government. And it's seeming to become overwhelming in the fact that we are now in the halls of lesser administrations or countries or however you want to call it. But there's something to be said about this, about Judge Sarah Ellis. Let me rephrase that, is that we can see slow movements of pushback, whether it's from the judges. This is a big deal. The fact that there is at least a showing of accountability, trying to make them seem accountable. Whereas a couple of weeks ago, it was just, sorry, that's it. We don't have to show our faces. We don't have to identify ourselves. If we beat you up, we beat you up. If we disappear you, too bad. If we send you somewhere else, not our problem. Now it seems like, all right, small cracks in the armor here, yes, by ways of judge and by the press, by not adhering to Pete Hegseth's new demands for covering the Pentagon. I mean, from your point of view as a lawyer, and you see a lot of this happening as far as the legality as of what they are doing, are you seeing more and more pushback coming from various judges? Or, I mean, is this do you see this as the beginning possibly?
I think it's the beginning. I think it's actually the continuation. We've seen this. Actually, I go back to March 15th when judges, a fellow named James Boasberg in the District of Columbia said, you know what? If there are 238 people on those planes going to El Salvador, you bring them back here. You tell the pilot to turn around. And many, many other instances, Greg and Jane, where that has happened. Sarah Ellis, the most recent of all of these. And yes, indeed, your listeners and all of us should take more than just solace in the notion that she is one of the guardrails, as are these other federal judges, saying, no, this is not permissible. This is not legal. Don't do it. And so they are one of the guardrails. It's federal district court judges for the most part. It's also appeals court judges. Again, when you get into the United States Supreme Court, you hit this brick wall with appears to be granting the president permission to do whatever he wants to do. But there are judges out there saying no. The big question, which we've also talked about in the past on this wonderful broadcast, is what if the government, as it seems to be doing again in the streets of Chicago, witness this guy named Gregory Bovino, simply says, judge, no, I'm not doing that. What if Donald Trump says no, Supreme Court, or other judges, what do we do then? then right. we truly are beyond a constitutional crisis. Right. Then we're beyond even an authoritarian government.
What authority is gonna step in and hold them to account? The one thing I will take a little solace from is some of the judges who are making these decisions are actually Trump appointees who are coming yes. back and saying, yeah, nice try. You can't do that. But something I find very disturbing that I don't think we've talked about nearly enough. This is from NBC News. Some new ICE recruits are showing up to training without being vetted. Recruits have had criminal backgrounds, failed drug tests, couldn't meet physical or academic standards. There is such a rush to deport people and get his quota up because Donald Trump has a quota. Stephen Miller has a quota. And they're just filling this up with people that we don't even know where they come. They could be Proud Boys. They could be all January 6th defendants who attacked Capitol police officers. I don't understand why there is no oversight over that agency, Jim.
There should be. And frankly, to your last comment, Jane, wouldn't we assume that many of these people are among the 1,000 folks that the president pardoned early in his term on the first day? Proud Boys, Three Percenters, those folks, mostly because we don't see their faces. We don't know who they are. We have no names. And this latest reporting that you have just accurately recited confirms, again, a basic flaw in what has been a part of this administration, this term and past term as well. If you want to work for the Department of Justice, I will tell you, this is what I dealt with for 30 years. Appropriately, you submit your documents, and until you're completely vetted, your background is done, your academic background is determined, whether you've got any criminal history, what is your present financial status, what is your family status, all these things go into it. And I've been in situations where I wanted to bring on an assistant U.S. attorney, the FBI wants to bring in a special agent. They're ready to go until someone in Washington gives me or gives that supervisor the call and says, you are ready. You can now call in Calvin and bring him on as an agent of the federal government. Until that happens and that approval is given, that person has no authority. They cannot enter the building, mm-hmm. much less be out there doing things. This, once again, is law enforcement turned on its head. And therefore, we get these kinds of things where there's no background check and then presumably also no training. We've seen those videos as well. We give them guns. We go out there. There's no training on how to make a lawful arrest so people do not have their ribs broken and do not end up in the hospital. There are ways of doing that. That's a part of training. It is all destroyed. And apparently, the president is just fine with that. Stephen Miller is fine with that. And again, situation 2025, go back to your central point. Judges are saying, Mr. President, no, you cannot do this, do better. And we should take, again, some solace in that, even though the incidents continue to happen around the nation.
Staff members at the ICE Training Academy in Georgia discovered one recruit had previously been charged with strong-armed robbery, battery from a domestic violence incident. They've also found as recently as this month, some recruits going through the 6-week training course hadn't even submitted fingerprints yet for their background checks. And we're giving them guns and sending them out on the streets.
I had to submit my fingerprints to get a bartending license in this state. Mm-hmm. And they're not. Right. My goodness. Actually, what's weird, and I know it's going to sound odd, but there is a bit of sympathy I actually feel for trained, qualified ICE agents who, while I don't agree with what they're doing, those individuals come bumbling in, can't make their lives any easier either. I mean, you're trying to create a situation and calm it down maybe, and they come in with their guns blade. This is bad.
Yeah, or dropping guns. That's not good. Jim Santel, we're going to continue our conversation with him on the other side. The Tish James case. I have questions. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay with us.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, our one, our only Calzone on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text at 855-855-855. 952-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream. Good morning, live stream.
Hi.
On Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up after 10 o'clock, Hans Breitenmoser will be joining us. He is a farmer, dairy farmer, cattle producer here in Wisconsin. We're going to talk about President Trump essentially telling cattle farmers, if only you knew as much about cattle as I do. So we're going to talk to Hans Breitenmoser and see how he reacts to that. Right now, Jim Santel, our friend, colleague, host of Amicus, a law review on Saturdays across the network from 9 to 11, is our guest. In the time that we have left, Jim, I wanted to talk about this Tish James case. Of course, the Trump administration has brought charges against New York Attorney General Letitia James. She's being accused, and now my website just went down. I got to bring it back up again. She is accused of mortgage fraud, and from what I was able to read, and correct me if I'm wrong, they're saying that she lied on her mortgage application about whether or not she was going to rent out her house. That's the big crime, right?
That's it. That she made a false statement when she got this loan and affirmed that the house would be a second residence, would not rent it out. That's number one, even without what has developed recently. That's the huge crime here that's alleged in this indictment presented once again by this interim U.S. attorney. And we've got some developments now, Jane, as you've called to my attention and the attention of your listeners, that it turns out that there is a rider. There is an insurance rider. There's a bank loan rider, rather, on this, that basically says that indeed you can use it for short-term rentals. This is one of those situations, Jane and Greg, where you know what? You don't have to be a lawyer. You don't have to be a judge. And maybe even if you're an insurance lawyer, which is what the U.S. attorney does, practices there,
yeah,
maybe you should have noticed that indeed this is the kind of thing that will not only affect your capacity to bring the lawsuit in the first place, but to get a conviction. You know, if this goes to a trial and the judge and the defense introduces evidence, the judge may well look at this and say, you know what? There's nothing here to be decided by a jury. You could even do something called a directed verdict, directing the verdict based upon the fact that there's no way factually that a jury could find this person guilty, Letitia James, based upon the fact that there is no overt, not even close, any fraud here of the sort that's alleged. It's a stunning development, once again. It's going to sink this lawsuit, as will other motions as well.
Well, and my whole thing is, this was a victimless crime. There was no one who lost money. There was no one that got ripped off by this. They're just claiming that she lied for the purpose of getting this loan on this form. So there are no victims involved here. Nobody that she ripped off, unlike Steve Bannon, who ripped off Trump supporters for his wall. I can think of a number of other cases of Trump supporters ripping off people where actual harm was incurred monetarily, and they all got pardoned. But they want to go after Tish James for this. This seems like, what is it called? Grasping for straws.
Yes, yeah. It's also called vindictive prosecution. And the reason why she gets prosecuted, she'll raise this motion as well, in addition to this issue about there being this rider on the bank loan itself. She'll also maintain that the only reason I'm here, as she said publicly, is that the President of the United States wanted me indicted. And we pulled up some information here, as you said. You know, the dollar amount that she benefited from is so de minimis, so small. No U.S. attorney's office across the nation would ever even bring this as a viable prosecution, given the low dollar amount to begin with, even if there was a misstatement, which there wasn't here.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So
right.
Many problems with this. And the reason we're here once again is because Donald Trump wanted to get back at her. This is his retribution, which he promised the American people.
Yeah.
Those who voted for him, this is what you get.
Yep.
This is the retribution. And it's also the abuse, number one, of our judicial system. This is being bandied about, obviously, inside our courts. And it brings into the courtroom somebody who should be focused exclusively on what law enforcement in New York. If you think this isn't diverting her, think again. And that's the other, of course, piece of what Donald Trump wants to do. It's the investigation. It is the prosecution itself, in his view, which is the punishment. It does have that impact. Again, it's an abuse of the system, abuse of justice.
And her name just now goes on the growing list of enemies. That's the thing.
Yes.
You know, and he said it out loud numerous times.
I saw a flag by my mother-in-law's house that said Trump 2024, the revenge tour, and that perfectly encapsulates what this is. Yes. Coming from a party, might I add, that 10, 15 years ago, they were railing against gay marriage, people who didn't like war, and frivolous lawsuits. It was frivolous lawsuits. They could not stop talking about that. And now this case, to me, that seems like it should get no attention from the federal government, is now the centerpiece and the ire of Donald Trump. Once again, putting in charge someone to prosecute the case who has no business and qualified. No experience.
Well, and I also think this is indicative of the kinds of charges that the government could bring against just regular citizens like you and me.
Yes.
Yeah. Right?
Let's it'd be fascinating to see what the grand jury was told here. The other problem that she has very quickly is if she did not present this information to the grand jury, there's an obligation on a prosecutor to present what's called exculpatory information. Mm-hmm. If she didn't present this to the grand jury, she has an ethical problem also down the road when we get those grand jury transcripts and figure out what this grand jury did and did not hear at the time of this indictment. More problems to come in this case.
Join Jim Santel Saturday mornings, 9 to 11, Amicus, the Law Review across the network. Thank you so very much, my friend. We'll see you next week. News coming up next. Stay with us. This is Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the vast statewide, countrywide. You can pick us up around the globe on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.